Season 2 of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. For those of you who didn't know, that right there, that's my attempt at a nerd laugh. I am 8th Dan Stanadu, and we are in the Nerds, Jocks, and Preppies. Almost flipped that around. That's Nerd, Jocks, and Preppies season, and I am joined, as usual, by my good friends Jim. Say hello, Jim.
I am thrilled to be here talking about some sex comedies.
Woo!
VHS era, the movies that we watched when we were way too young to be watching these movies.
Oh yeah, that's what got us, and I know we're going to be talking about some of that. Blackjack Hall.
Sup, Stan. Sup, Stan, I do.
I know Sup. That you were excited to be here. Sup. Because I know you love yourself some boobies.
Hey, look, last night I saw that Infinity War. No boobies. No boobies at all. I was so disappointed.
All right, Nick. Nick is in the house.
Greetings and salutations. You know, that intro wasn't quite as creepy as I thought it was going to be. And then it just veered into the creepy. It was amazing.
Excellent. Well, you know, we do try. We try to bring some creepy into every show. And Brad. Oh, Brad is not here again.
What?
This is terrible. I told him we
changed nights so that Brad could make it, and he's still not here.
Nope. That guy. He's mountain climbing this time.
Have you tried just call? He's what?
Mountain climbing.
What? He doesn't have internet on the top of the mountain?
Well, oddly enough, no. In this case, this is one of the few times that he hasn't had internet.
Now.
I guess he figures that it's not worth calling in from the side of a mountain.
Well, then he's going to miss out because we are talking a great film.
Oh, yes, we are. We are talking, you know, one of the grandpappies of... not the grandpappy, but like one of the grandpappies of the genre, Revenge of the Nerds, the 1984 classic.
Yeah, I would consider it to be top three of the genre for grandpappies.
Yes.
It's kind of like, I mean, it's not old enough to be a grandpappy, but maybe like the creepy uncle of the genre.
Well, it's definitely that.
It's got some creepy. There's no question about that. We will be going into some creepy zones.
a prime example. Let's go with that.
All right. Well, as per usual, let's get the story roundup of the movie from Nick Boxer.
All right. Well, we got some nerds and they go to college and you know what? They're branded nerds immediately upon arriving at college. And then they get some revenge. Really, this isn't a plot a plot heavy movie. We got nerds. We got breasts.
We've got Bush.
Nice work.
Brilliant.
Really, there's something to offend everybody in this film.
And wait until because I am going to talk about the deleted scenes as well because they deserve
I can't wait to hear about
inclusion.
This.
So
I'm looking forward to that part. I haven't seen them. I haven't heard about them.
There was a television show pilot you also watched, hey, San?
That's right. That's right. Oh.
We better get talking this film right now then.
Yeah, there's so much nerds. Like,
where do we even start with this movie?
Well, it's really weird because like in the case of Revenge of the Nerds, because I know that we've all seen it multiple times, that it kind of feels like going back and hanging with an old friend. You know, the first moment that you set in there and you see like Anthony Edwards underneath the covers, and then when you get to you know the awesome turn from what's his name, Cromwell, James Cromwell as the father, who was Jamie in this case, he created the nerd laugh too, which is fantastic.
Yeah, nerd alert trivia, though that's my dig. But there you go.
That's right. That's right. Well, since I've seen a lot of the extra stuff, then I may wind up pitching
because
in with
you're told
nerd alert.
Not You're told not to, but you do anyways.
Well, when I had to watch the extras, I didn't watch the I didn't watch the commentary track. So
I would love to see the commentary track. I do believe this. Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, it's been a long time since I've seen this, but yeah, I mean, like, I've seen it over the years. I saw it so many times that I believe this is the first R-rated movie I ever saw. So, like, if you're going to start with an R-rated movie, this is this sets the standard pretty damn high.
Well, it's funny, yeah. Though, because... Oh, sorry, if you want to go on there, Nick.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, it is kind of like going back and hanging out with an old friend who is way more sexist and racist than you remember them being.
Just like most of our old friends, yeah.
Because, I mean, before I went into this, I actually braced myself and go, okay, the misogyny, okay, I know what that is. Homophobia, okay, I know that's going to be there. What I was not prepared for was the offensive blind jokes. I completely forgot that this movie hated people of Japanese descent. The mere plethora of stuff I had to guard myself against, because I remember loving this movie.
It really goes next level when they have the Japanese stereotype dress up as a Red Indian stereotype. they're like layering at that point.
All right, this is the part where I call Nick a snowflake.
Oh, man.
Have you been triggered, Nick? Is that what's happened?
And it only gets worse. It would have been so much worse if they hadn't cut two of the scenes in it. I don't know. Do you want to hear about them right away?
Yeah, let's hear the two scenes that are... There were two races for this film.
So in the movie, there's the part where the nerds are going to Lambda 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 because they've got to meet with, I forget his name, Bernie.
Oh, by the way, yeah, I can't remember his name either, but Lambda 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 is an all-African-American fraternity.
Yeah, Bernie Casey, UN Jefferson.
UN Jefferson, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, Lambda Lambda Lambda, LLL, one letter after KKK for that reason. There's a little nerd alert trivia.
Nice.
That is awesome.
I totally did not get that. No, it's good work. Yeah.
Wow, layering in Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, this has got more depth than it gets credit for.
So
it does.
I'm told from the description on the DVD case that it's a classic.
Yes, that is right.
It is.
I don't know that they all are, but yeah. So, anyways, the nerds. We all know in the story that the nerds go and they meet with UN Jefferson and they become, you know, probationary members of Lambda Lambda Lambda. Well, there is a cut scene, firstly, of them showing up at the Lambda 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 convention, and now this is Bobby Carradine's character Lewis, and of course Anthony Edwards Gilbert character, and they show up wearing like tribal black outfits.
Oh my god.
And they're walking around with that like yo kind of thing, and everybody is of course looking at them. This is significantly less racist than the scene that follows. So the scene that follows it is there's a couple of points in the movie where they were actually going to follow completely random storylines that they didn't actually flesh out, and thankfully they cut. I will tell you about the other one because it lands in one of my what the fuck moments. But this one, and it works amazingly well. It's so Lewis has a I think he's an uncle who is rich and who gives him his trust fund check. Either that or it's the lawyer. Not completely sure. Played by Michael Lerner. And so they meet him outside at the pool of this convention for Lambda Lambda Lambda. And so they start talking. They do their, like, here's your trust fund check, here's your money kind of thing. And Michael Lerner starts saying, what the fuck is with all the Schwartzes hanging around here?
Oh, my God.
And he's just like, well, you see, that's our fraternity. You're in a fraternity with Schwartzes? And he must have said Schwartzes like, I'm not doing that word justice, as I don't sound particularly Jewish, but he must have said it like 50 times in this scene. And then he stands up and explodes and is yelling it like five times. And it's great because when he stands up, Lewis stands up and the camera cuts their heads off.
You know, who did you say played this role? Michael Richards?
Michael Lerner.
Oh, okay.
I believe Michael Richards
would have been better.
Well, yeah, sure.
I'm trying to imagine that this scene was cut because they're like, maybe not enough people will know that racist slur, rather than this is not a scene we should put in the movie.
But the weird thing is that just from the idea of him getting his trust fund check, it's like, wow, talk about something that makes absolutely no sense within the context of the movie anyways. I mean, you have this really, because that was the thing that struck me about the beginning of the movie, was that there's so much heart. You know, you can tell that Lewis and Gilbert actually care about each other. You know, again, like, James Cromwell does a great job of being... does a great job of being, you know, fatherly and stuff like that.
Nerd dad,
yep. I guess it's Gilbert who gets the check, the more that I think about it. But you know, it's either way. It's confused and it makes no sense within the context of the movie. And boy, am I ever glad that they cut those two scenes out.
So, Stan, I have to give you a particular honor. I don't think... I personally have ever heard that particular racist slur said aloud.
Well,
I've read that word.
Yeah, I mean, I've read it in various places, but yeah, I don't know that I've ever heard it either. Maybe that's like I said. Maybe I think it just got cut because it
was Spaceballs. Wasn't it in Spaceballs?
Well, that's Schwartz.
Oh, maybe.
Oh, okay.
But I do think that it's similar. I actually had to look it up on the internet too.
I know it was definitely in. It must have been in.
It would have been in Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles.
Yes, yes, sure. That's right. Yeah. I remember it there for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah. So it's a Yiddish slur against a black person. You know, it's. I mean, so obviously it's not well. You know, a well used term or anything. But thank you, Revenge of the Nerds, for bringing that up. Because it's definitely not, it's not what you'd call politically correct. That's for sure.
No.
Well, it's in the era. It's we've moved past this era, thankfully, but to judge it by today's standards is I don't know if that's 100% fair. Anyways.
Well, no. Right? I mean, it's 24 years old. I mean, there's no question
that at all.
I think it's
34.
I think you'll find it's 34 years old.
Yes.
I don't want to bring a lot of math into this.
Yeah. Octagon's already bad enough for that.
That's right. That's a lot of graphing as it is. I think it's now old enough that we can safely say it was a different time. and that's kind of an explanation of everything.
Well, actually, I remember specifically watching this film thinking, thank God I am the last generation ever to watch this film.
It does not age well. I've spoken to millennials who have watched this film, and they don't react well.
Really?
Yeah.
It's such a great fucking movie.
They have to have a lie down.
Oh, God. They're the snowflakes. Come on. So what about? So what can you watch then? Pre, I don't know, 2010. If that's the case,
I don't think you're allowed. I think if it's, that's not true. You're allowed to watch Friends. You could be a good millennial and watch Friends. After that, I mean, that's kind of like the lone, That's like the Friends is like the Gilligan's Island for millennials.
You have to say after watching every episode, where are the black people in New York?
you gotta write 3 or 4 think pieces after every season, but other than that, you can enjoy it.
I mean, this movie, as racist as it is that we're commenting about, is 1/10 as racist as the Dean Martin roast that were on TV in the 70s.
Let's add another 20 years.
This has evolved, yeah. I mean, the gay stereotype was at least a positive character in the story. So that has moved the needle.
Yeah, he was completely stereotypical. But at the same time, there was nothing wrong with him.
People liked him. He was he was good to his friends.
And look, we're doing all 80s sex comedies. Which one of these films do you think will not have something like this that offends us? So if you're going to look at it from those eyes.
So I've got one more thing to say about the inherent racism of this film before we move on to and it's, I'm going to jump all the way to the end of the movie. So the end of the movie, the Gilbert has been roughed up again by the Alpha Betas. Was that a reference to anything, by the way, the Alpha Beta?
Not that I know of.
Okay. It felt like it should have been, but I couldn't figure it out.
Alpha males, you know.
Yeah, I guess alpha males, but I mean, it's alpha beta. I mean, there's no beta males, but no one ever mentions beta males.
I don't know. I might be a beta male, to be honest.
I'm like a theta. I'm not even like the top five. So their fraternity brothers from the other schools come to help them out.
Because I was thinking how this is the whitest football team that they kept on talking about being a winning football team. I'm like, there's not one black guy on this football team. But then it made sense at the end.
Well, Lambda brothers show up and they're all black, of course. It's like, aside from the guys, the characters in the story, it's an all black fraternity. They show up and there is no threat. The bad guys back down because black men have shown up.
Yes. They were big. They were big black men. And they looked really mean. I don't even know
if they outnumbered the football team. I think there were fewer of them.
Oh, no, they totally didn't outnumber the football team.
But you have to remember, bullies are always cowards at heart. So that just the idea that there's somebody who might cause a challenge that they can't easily pick on means that they'll back down. That's all.
That's what the after school special said, that's for sure.
Yeah, I just think that the fact that the only black people were on this school and there wasn't one black football player on a winning football team, I cannot abide by that. Not to sound racist.
Wait a minute. Wait.
Jackie, it was a different time.
I don't think any of this had to do with football. They do a sign like that. That's the football team. But other than that, we don't see any. The amount of time they spend practicing, doing other stuff.
They're on the field practicing.
yeah, but they forget to practice.
They actually do forget to practice.
Well, you would too if you had, what was it called? Unnatural heat or whatever dropped in your
truck. Yeah, that heat.
I love that scene. So hilarious. This movie had me laughing out loud multiple times because I can watch this. I can watch Silver Street. I can watch the Dean Martin roasts.
There was a line in it that I wanted to bring to you guys. Early on, they're talking about the Alpha Betas and they're talking about Gilbert and I've blanked on the other on Carradine's character.
Oh, Lewis.
Lewis. So Gilbert and Lewis, they're going to apply to the Alpha Betas, try to get into the fraternity. And Gilbert says that fraternity's made up. They're all jocks and face men. What does face men mean?
I remember specifically during the era wondering what that meant.
I believe it means good looking guys.
I remember calling in oh, maybe that's an A-team reference and letting it go.
Yeah, but maybe. I don't know. Was this around? I guess this would have been before.
Well, but I think A-team. I think it's a parallel thing. They call him Face because he's a face man. And then the reference is it's all jocks and face men. So, like, I think they're a parallel reference to something.
Look, of all the stuff I want to talk about on this film, this is not high on my list.
Well, look, I'm trying to mix it up.
You can also say that the Japanese character that was the nerd was also a very likable character. That he wasn't, you know, sure was completely racist in his in the portrayal, but again, he was, at least he wasn't the bad guy just because he was not like wrestling still in the 80s, just because he's Japanese.
Hey, and we learned something really important. We learned something really important from that character.
Yeah.
2-7's Pizza Fresh.
What the fuck is the fresh?
There's this great moment because on the DVD extras, there's a little documentary on the movie, and the guy who plays Booger,
Curtis Armstrong, the greatest 80s actor of that generation.
Well, perhaps besides Donald Gibb, but Curtis Armstrong had said that he had come in to read for, I think it was either Lewis or Gilbert. Like, almost everybody came in to read for
Lewis, it was for Gilbert.
Yeah, it was for Gilbert. Yeah. But Jack, if you have this as part of your nerd alert, but he had gotten, you know, in for that role. And then they were like, hey, you know, and he's like, the only role that I don't want to be is Booger. I'm turning that role down flat out. And then they're like, so would you be interested in Booger? And he's like, yeah, no. Oh, yeah, I will.
Yeah, basically, he said, I'm not picking my nose on camera for anybody. And then when they offered it to him, he's like, well, I am broke. So... so I'll take it. And then he went on to appear in all four films. One of only three characters to appear in all four films.
I believe Curtis Armstrong's picked his nose in every role he's in in cinema.
It's like his
it's
thing.
Possible.
But I mean, let's be honest, right? I mean, that movie stands up because of his performance as Booger.
Booger are the two standout characters in a lot of... Well, actually, I don't know about that. There's a lot of standout characters, memorable characters and everything. But yeah, he's really good in the film as that character. And the character was written to have, you know, longer hair and be more of a biker type. And instead, he just ends up as this degenerate loser under Curtis Armstrong, but it's great.
You know, if he was bigger and had long hair and was kind of biker type, I don't think it would have landed.
No, definitely. It turned out perfect.
I mean, anyone who's seen this movie, you just say Booger and they like, no. It is just so him that he's the one real person in this movie for me. Everyone else is a caricature, although, I mean, funny caricatures, but.
Well, it's also interesting. Booger's the nerd that is just like geeky. Like, he's just awkward and out of place. Like, the rest of them have a thing. Like, the rest of them are like, it's Booger, the robot guy and the computer guy and the too young guy and the this and that. He's just some dude. Like, he's in the outcast group because he's an outcast, not because of his superpower.
Yes.
he's the one that if you picture a nerd now, it's none of these qualities. It's that guy. Like, he's
yeah,
the
that's
outcast.
True. Yeah,
if you jump ahead 35 years, that's
just completely disgusting. Like he doesn't shower. He picks his nose. No girl wants to meet him. He's unkept. That's what makes him the outcast and the nerd, right? He doesn't fit in anywhere except for in this group where everybody can fit in, which is the nice thing and positive message about this. I mean, they say to Lamba, they're like, we will accept all faces and. Faiths and religions, I believe, and then the gay guy goes, and sexual orientations, and they kind of look at him and go, yeah, it's true. You know,
that part is surprisingly progressive in a film like this. Like, yeah, it's, to actually, yeah, I mean, it again, like, I mean, like I said, that that is a Lamar is a more positive, I mean, as as stereotypical as it is, it's still a more positive view than we will probably see for the rest of the season.
I think that was one of my big takeaways, is the juxtaposition. I was watching the end speech by Lewis, where he's going, "I'm a nerd, and you know, everyone's a little nerdy. We should accept all people." And then I started thinking back to all the different, just completely ostracizing things they've shown in this movie. The Lamar's limp-wristed throwing style, and Toshi as a character on a whole, and
Takashi.
And I mean, the blind stereotype. I mean, there was just so much that it went out of his way to offend everyone. But I was tearing up watching this stupid speech.
And thanks for crediting Lewis, because Gilbert always gets the credit for that speech. Because he starts talking, but he only says like four lines, and then Lewis actually carries it.
Well, Lewis is the guy.
But it's always referred to as Gilbert's speech.
Well, and then it's important to also know that, like much of this film, that was largely improvised. They had an outline of what they're supposed to say, but the actors, again, there's another nerd alert, but Robert Carradine and Anthony Edwards largely improvised that speech, which is, again, part of why I think it is great, because it is improvised. It does feel heartfelt.
Well, they really had, like, that was the thing. I think that the script that they had was wrong. You know, it wasn't going to work, and I know that
there wasn't a lot on the script. I mean, that they really just had really outlines and not much movie there.
Yeah, and
I think that actually leads to the scoring, because that really would lead us to discussing the more heart than budget.
All right. Well, let's.
Well, do we want to start into the? I've got so many notes.
I don't have any notes. Notes are for snowflakes.
That's. I'm beautiful and unique. That is true. All right. For those joining us for the first time, we rate the films in five categories, none of which are objective quality. These are all about the enjoyment of the movies. These scores are tabulated and shook up, and we put them in a blender, and we fire them into what's called the Octagon, which is our ongoing list of our highest and lowest rated movies. So check our website for the Octagon. Find out everything we've done up till now. If you're listening to this and it's been three or four more years of episodes after you've listened to this one, then pick out your favorite movies. And there was something else I was going to say there, but
clearly not important.
But yeah, so let's just move on. Our first category we call Schlock Appeal, and we're starting with Stan.
See, I get, oh man, like, I really, really struggle with this movie. Not because I don't enjoy it, but because it felt a little wrong to me in this case. Like, it feels, I know it's schlocky, but it doesn't feel schlocky on the outside to me. So, or maybe on the inside. But, so that
or
was,
maybe halfway between the outside and the inside,
like, yeah. Surface schlock, but yeah,
50% like, of the way through.
So I yep, really did yep, struggle overall with the idea of how I should score this, because it certainly doesn't feel like a 9, but it doesn't feel like a 2. So I'm just going to give it a 6.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and I think it's because this movie sort of invents a whole new exploitation genre.
We didn't have
nerd exploitation films before Revenge of the Nerds, but I'm pretty sure we had, and we're going to probably view some during this season, but. After, I think it became schlocky after this film.
Yeah.
So, like, is the schlock ingrained in the DNA that, like, but yeah, I think I'm straight up the middle on this one, 5.
Yeah, this is a film that schlock appeal means that the low quality, the low rent feel of it actually makes it better, because it's just, you know, and it's like, this film's too good. It shouldn't have been, but despite everything, it's too good to have a high schlock score. So I'm giving it a 3.
It's pretty gloss, honestly. Like, I mean, it wasn't made for a lot of money, but it's, I don't know. It doesn't have a lot of goofiness to me. It doesn't have a lot of that kind of overreaching, we're doing something crazy. I think that it ends on a moralistic tale, takes away some of the schlock for me. So I'm also only going to do it a 3. Speaking of money, our second category is called More Heart Than Budget. And Stan, jump in with this one.
Well, you know, again, this is a tough one for me, because there's a lot of heart. There's a lot of heart, but that's like story heart. That's not necessarily we threw everything in, because I think where I really struggle with this one is in the soundtrack. Like, there's so many. I mean, there's a Michael Jackson song. You know, there's just so much stuff added on top of it that it feels very big budget, even though I know it wasn't. I mean, I know that this was funded so that basically the studio could take a loss when it lost money, because they had Star Wars. You know,
yeah, so Empire. They had Return of the Jedi, and they needed to do a tax write off because they made so much money off that.
So, you know, it's like I understand everything about it, but it feels like budgety and almost too big budget. But again, I'm giving.
But
it
it's
four.
Not.
Yeah, I'll give it a 4. It's close to the middle, but I just can't go high.
Yeah. Once again, I have to follow you on this. I think everyone in this movie was really, really trying. But on a whole, I also know Robert Carradine. You know, it was a paycheck film for. So yeah, I'm going with the 4.
Well, no, it was. It was when he didn't want to be in it, but once he started it, it wasn't.
Like, he wouldn't have done the rest, but
yeah, no. Once he started everybody involved, once they started it, I started to realize that they had something here, and they were realizing it as they were going on. They really started throwing themselves into it, including Robert Carradine.
Okay, I'm sticking with the score though.
Okay, I'm giving it a 10, because this is exactly what, and this is where I think we're still having. Maybe it's something that we'll straighten out at some point, but this is like, here you have a film that is an extremely low budget that's done as a tax write-off, where more money is spent on acquiring the soundtrack because they want the soundtrack to make money, because they don't need a tax write-off in that department under Fox, but they do under the film division. So more money is spent at acquiring an excellent, tremendous soundtrack for this film than there is actually spent into the film. And yet here you have a film that not only makes a lot of money, that is pop culture influential, and that does have heart, and that does, and the people can go, there's uncomfortable moments, but the message is good. It wasn't supposed to. They're sitting there to the director saying, we're not going to hire you unless, because he's saying he admires Risky Business. And they're saying, we don't want you to make Risky Business. Risky Business was too good a movie. We want you to make Animal House, but poorly. And it's only when he says to them, I plan to make, he keeps on saying, I plan to make the worst movie I can, or sorry, the best movie I can. And when he finally says to them, I plan to make a piece of shit, basically, that they agree to hire him. The studio agrees to hire him on. The fact that this movie is as good and as successful and as important and iconic and everything as it is, that is the epitome of more heart than budget, because it wasn't meant to be. And it is. So it's a 10.
Well, Jack, you've won my heart. I'm gonna.
That was a speech. That was a speech similar to what Gilbert and Lewis.
Yeah, and you finished the whole thing. Lewis didn't come in to do this, the last 2/3 of it, and all the important parts. I'm gonna make this. This will be a 7 for me. I think they do make this. They didn't have a lot of money. They didn't also. I mean, they didn't explode anything or anything like that. It's not like they. You know, did anything crazy with the amount of money they had, but they made a passable movie, or a good movie that looks, it's got some gloss on it, and it holds up to a high definition blow up, which a lot of these VHS era ones do not.
Oh yeah, that's true.
All right, Now on to what is always our favorite category. And this one often takes twice as long as the whole rest of the scoring. The what the fuck moments. The moments that are not only weird to be in this movie, they're weird to be in any movie. Stan?
Now, this is, to me, this is a perfect example of the difference between, we're going to talk about the difference between the what the fucks and the memorable moments, because I really feel like this movie has those down. Like, you know, what the fucks, like, overall, within the context of the movie, I don't necessarily feel like there's a ton. Now, I will talk about the one what the fuck from the deleted scenes. So, right off the bat,
it's kind of cheating, but go ahead.
I know it is.
We'll allow it.
I'm not going to score it per se due to that, but I have to mention it because it totally threw me off. Because so you've got Ted McGinley's character Stan Gable. It's at the party right at the beginning. He gets a phone call, and on the phone is a nerd who's like, "Where's my money? Where's my fucking money?" And Stan's like, "I don't have it right now, man. I'll get it for you, okay? I'll get it for you. Just I told you not to call me at this number." And I'm like, what the hell is Stan doing owing money to a nerd? Like, where did this word come from?
Okay, well, and this is it, is that there was scenes filmed where Stan is a nerd. He is a secret nerd. You know, the alternate ending is that he goes back to his dorm and he puts on a pair of glasses and starts reading a textbook until somebody knocks on his door and he has to throw them off and go back to being the jock. So, yeah. Again, it's not in the movie, but these are the things that, you know.
So those kind of things almost stand out to me more as WTF. But then, of course, some of the racist stuff was terribly what the fucky. Overall, I'm going to give it a 6, but I could have gone higher if I had really included the deleted scenes.
Wow. You know, I'm going high on this one. I'm giving it an 8. Ostensibly for Betty's remarkable character turn at the end. I mean, Betty here is essentially date raped by a nerd. Her nude picture against her knowledge is circulated around the entire Adams College.
I don't think she ever knows that, though. That one, I don't think she knows.
Oh, okay. And then she says, "I can't believe I'm in love with a nerd."
Which all happens in one day.
Yeah.
One day in like 45 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, all she needs is some V8 juice and we got ourselves.
I mean, this is the perfect example where an actor should have gone, you know, we can dial back how into Lewis Betty is. At the end of the film, we don't have to go all the way to love.
Don't forget that this girl, who's a complete bitch, that he despite that, and it's horrible to him, that he, despite that, is still into and likes. Don't forget that at the end, when they give their speech and they invite everybody who's ever felt like a nerd to come running up, she's one of the first to go, "Yeah, this gorgeous blonde running up. Yeah, I felt like a nerd." I'm like, when he was inside you?
What was it? Stan has a weird line right before that, too. Like, Betty's coming on to him, and Stan says, I wrote down, "Betty, you're like a goat."
No, it is something like that. Betty, he does say something like...
Maybe that's what she felt like a nerd was when she got called. She's called a goat for no
wanting to have sex, and he's like, "You should wait."
I remember, you know, when I saw it this time, you know, the whole date. I keep calling it date rape. That's straight out rape. Sorry.
They weren't on a date. Yes. Yeah.
It is date rape in the context. Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't understand how appalling this was. And in the context of the movie, it sort of makes sense. But her character turn still bothered me.
This is definitely the scene that that when modern viewers watch it, it's the one that sticks the worst. It's the one that the think pieces are about, for sure.
There's no question. I mean, these kind of movies,
there's going to be something.
We see these a lot, you know, in these older 80s movies. And it's hard. I mean, because these type of things, they exist. They don't just exist here. I mean, they exist in like Breakfast Club. They exist in like Pretty in Pink and stuff like that, where like guys don't get they don't get the message. They don't have to have the message. It's just like, oh, I'm kind of a douchebag. I'm going to be a bit of a sexual predator on you, but you're going to love me, you know.
Yeah, and it's like when they like they're treated terribly by these women and by these jocks. So you almost, even though it's illegal and whatever, when they go and set up the cameras and film the women and become peeping toms on the camera and look at these naked women showering or whatever, you almost forgive it, because even though it's a terrible act, it's their revenge for the way that they've been treated terribly. Like, so both sides are in the wrong, and they weren't and they were in the wrong second. So it's almost, you can almost forgive it, but yeah, there's really no way to forgive this one. this straight up rape. There is no way to forgive it.
Jack, you got anything else you want to add in this?
And that's where it's like, it is also my biggest WTF, both the fact that they thought to put it in there and her reaction. Cause it's not like immediately, like as soon as he pulls off the mask and she's like, you're that nerd. Hey, you are great. It's not like, there's a moment of, or anything. It's like immediate. Like it's unbelievable. And it's, I mean, there's other things, you know, there's things like, you know, like the scene at the beginning when they're walking by with their suitcase type thing. And every bike goes by and it crashes, and like 40 things crash, like a car and all this different stuff just crash for no reason. Or, you know, or they're pulling they're cutting the ropes off where they're off the car where their suitcase is, and the ropes cutting off, and they're clearly ropes, makes the sound of an elastic band being broke for no reason that I can understand. Things like that.
Well, like, wanted it to be a slapstick comedy at that point.
Yeah, at that point, they still didn't know what they were making, I think. But yeah, the WTF at the end, I'm only giving it a 4 because it's like, it's too good to have the WTFs that were unintentional largely. But that one is a big one, but it's, yeah.
I have so many marked down for this category.
Oh, by the way, I can say to you, the line was, God, Betty, you're like a goat. You're right.
And any trivia on what the hell that means?
No, I want to do it, Stan. All this kissing has made me... God, Betty, you're like a goat.
Okay,
WTF right there.
The first question I asked, and I sent a message to Jack asking him to bring the information to the podcast. What percentage of the college students were older than John Goodman, who played the coach of the football team? Because John Goodman looks like 12 in this. And everyone else is like 30.
Yeah, John Goodman's like in his early 30s here. You know.
He's slightly older than Robert Carradine.
Carradine was like 30 or something when he made this, right?
But, yeah. And much older than Anthony Edwards.
Right. That's right.
I will hand it to the alpha betas that when they decide that they're going to go after the Tri-Lambs, they spend an inordinate amount of money going after them. They rent, presumably you would rent pigs for this. Maybe you have to purchase them. I mean, they're not returning them. So they want to disrupt the Tri-Lambs party. They release a bunch of pigs into the party. The Tri-Lambs go outside, and the Alpha Betas have rented a flatbed truck to stand on the back of and moon them. Like, they invested money.
There is no doubt. They went out of their way.
I never thought about that. But you're right.
the moment the WTF that is like so small though that I want to bring to attention is as they're trying to find a place to live, they send Wormser around, who's the 12-year-old, and he knocks on the door of a woman who's about 50, who then comes on to him at the door. The landlady says, "I've got a room and it for rent, and it's right next to mine."
Yes.
she's in curlers and yeah, nightgown or
hot,
whatever.
And
yeah.
It's a hot pink nightgown.
Oh yeah.
She's looking for love in all the wrong places.
It looks like a slightly less feminine divine. That's definitely one that stuck with me. All right, I'm gonna go for the 5 because I don't think it's really really crazy, but it's definitely got some moments that are weirder than the average bear. Which brings us to memorable moments. This is the moment that that you will carry with you in your heart as you walk through your days, Stan.
Honestly, this one for me, this is a good solid 9. Because it might even be a 10, but I'm going to go with a 9 just because there's so many memorable moments to me in this movie. Besides the speech, the lines. Like, I'm going to just skip past "We got Bush" because, you know, I mean, everybody knows that line, though. But, like, I mean, what I said earlier, the 2/7 beats a fresh. But, I mean, there's a couple of really awesome lines.
What the fuck is a fresh?
But, like... And I think they're both booger, but she's not that kind of a girl. Why? Does she have a penis? And then also, I love it.
You're talking about the character that's Gilbert ends up dating, Judy.
Yeah.
By the way, Joan Cusack and Sarah Jessica Parker both auditioned for that role.
Well,
no way.
Yeah.
And then one of my other favorite lines, you call that a chest? Well, actually, I call it a place to hang my nipples.
I don't even remember that one.
I missed that line.
I thought it was very funny.
Is that in the deleted scene or in the pilot of the sequels?
No, I actually think that I may have gone into my notes for jocks. I pull the jack.
Well, you've noticed that as soon as I did that, that was from writing down my scores. I haven't written down anything since.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. The wrong ones.
Either way, still going with a 9 on this one. And I'll save that line for next week.
Yeah, once again, you're spot on, Stan to do. 9 for me as well. There are so many classic scenes. And I mean, my favorite scene we haven't even mentioned, which is the skit scene, the rock video thing. I mean, that's just memory food.
Oh yeah.
You
as you go through and watch the movie, when you're us, every scene, like even if it's not top of mind, the second that you start watching it, it's just like, oh yeah, because I even remember the song. Like as they're playing, wah 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 wah, you know, it's just like it's in there. I got it, you know.
No, when I was watching this film, I honestly thought, you know, I remember. It's like I watched this film again last night. The only surprising things about this movie is, you know, some of the racism. Took me by surprise once again, and I remember Betty's breasts being bigger, but beyond that, it was like I watched it the night before.
This is a 10 for me. I mean, you have quotable lines that everybody knows, you know, you have she's got Bush and what the fuck is a Prush and these different things. And then you have little things like the characters themselves just being like, Ogre's such a memorable character. Booger's a memorable character. Gilbert and Lewis are memorable characters. I mean, I love at the beginning when he says something, you know, I think it's Gilbert says something, I can't remember exactly what it is. It's something along the lines of, I don't think we're going to find a place. He says it really calmly and nicely. And Lewis is like, yeah, we will. And then later, the next scene, you see them. He goes, "Sorry, I snapped at you, Lewis. It's just hilarious."
And let's not forget the nerd laugh.
How iconic is that? I think we all need to try our best nerd laugh.
It's much my regular laugh.
You got to work into it. You got to work up to the nerd laugh.
Yeah, I have to say that little effort on my part really hurt the throat. I should have warmed up for that.
I've never watched this movie and recognized Tim Busfield. Not once. I can be told that it's Tim Busfield. I can stop the movie, I can look it up, and I can look at pictures of Tim Busfield, and I still don't know it's him.
Well, it doesn't help that they put those thick glasses on him. They were so thick that if you watch the movie carefully, anytime there's a movie, there's a scene where he has to walk, somebody's holding his hand or leading him by the arm because he couldn't see.
He fell so many times because of those glasses, and that was his choice. He went to a thrift store and bought that outfit because he said that if he's this is how he's going to get the role, and if he doesn't, then you know whatever. But this is it.
But the character, like Poindexter, became a thing where you could call somebody a Poindexter and it meant nerd.
Yeah.
Or even the fact that nerd wasn't really before this movie a really common term. This movie, it's now one of the most common terms for, like, everybody knows what nerd is now. But in 1980, a few years before this movie was made in 84, if you had said the word nerd, like, 1 in 10 people might have known what he meant. You know? Like, this movie, definitely a 10 out of 10 for me for iconic, memorable moments.
Well, I'm also going to go high on this. I mean, certainly you mentioned a lot of the really great lines, the great scenes, some of the crazy things, like the whole Greek games is awesome. Like that's awesome. a weirder mix of events than Gymkata.
Oh, come on. Takashi, I'm sorry, but if the Takashi on his little bike getting drunk and then giving him that medication to the fight the effect of the alcohol, but he's still getting drunk and they sit there going, "How are you doing?" He goes, "Oh, fucking great."
The little
Japanese, what is it, lullaby or whatever? I mean, come on. Or Booger.
The line I want to pull out, though, is that Booger has a line that did not get, that Stan didn't mention, that I want to bring up, where, so the character Stan makes a drive-by of the Tri-Lam's house, and Booger's looking at him, and Stan says, "What are you looking at?" And Booger says, "I thought I was looking at my mother's old douchebag, but that's in Ohio."
I love that line. I somehow, even though it's again totally inappropriate, when they're asking for dates, when do you have a date, Booger? And Booger goes, "I don't. I mean, I've been hanging out at the high schools." Yeah. Oh, yes.
Oh, so awesome. And he has an Animal House type line, because when the Alpha Betas have kind of ramped things up too much, Booger says, "I say we just blow the fuckers up."
Yeah. And then they're like, "We can't do that." And he's like, "Well, I say we just blow the fuckers up." And how about his burp when he beats Ogre in the burping? They did that by taking a camel's burp and combining it with a human burp to make it that long. That's how they did the Foley effect.
Amazing.
Now there is one more in the deleted scenes. There's one more Greek game that got cut out from there, and then as well, there's a scene at the very end where the nerds actually discover the Alpha Betas after they've trashed the house, and it's a really awkward scene because it's just like that. Wow, you've done this, and then the Alpha Betas leave. Yeah, you know, it's but it's just really, like, again, very glad they cut most of these scenes. Made great sense why they cut them out. So
I love that. Just to say this on the Alpha, the whatever the Greek games, I love that they're showing the two sides competing, and the nerds are winning. Then they show the scorecard and they're down by 10. I'm like, what the fuck.
I was paying attention. I'm pretty sure the scores do work out, but no one else ever wins. Yeah, if you look at the last scorecard, there are two teams that have gotten no points in the entire thing.
I don't know about that. I'm like, they're winning every event, and yet they're losing. I don't...
No, because they didn't win the tug of war. They lost.
Oh, that's true. They didn't win the tug of war.
Oh no, there's several things.
Actually,
that
no,
they
I think
don't
they
win,
did, but, didn't they?
No, they let go. They
yeah, conceded. But I thought
they
said they
say you win.
Oh, you win. I thought
they conceded. No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you? Ogre dominated the bucking.
So they only won five of the seven events. My mistake. Of course they were losing. All right, let's move on to our last category.
All right, so the last category is called Crazy Concept. How out of the box is this movie, Stan?
And again, this is a tough one for me because it doesn't, nowadays, it doesn't feel like a crazy concept. I mean, like, the whole idea of like, the, you know, we've got the nerds at college, the fraternity houses and all that stuff. You know, it's not that crazy. There's some crazy things that occur, but overall, especially given its lineage back to Animal House and stuff like that, I'm only going to give it a 3.
Wow. I think at the time, this was a crazy pitch to make. Let's do Animal House for everybody else. Like, let's have the nerds deserve a shot. It sort of invented a nerdsploitation genre. So I think it's pretty crazy. Not like over the top, not Jim Cotta crazy. I'd go as high as a 6.
Yeah, in the bubble of 1984, I definitely think that if you look at it from that perspective, it's more crazy. If you look at it, go, it had to be crazy because the studio executives looked at it and went, hey, we have a script about this bunch of losers who join a black fraternity and then take on a bunch of jocks and beat them. So that's definitely going to lose us some money, so we can use which we can use as a write-off. That clearly shows that it's got something for that era as a crazy concept. So I think it's not the craziest that we've seen or will see, but a 5 is fair.
All right, I did go low on this. It is. I mean, probably the wackiest thing was that you're trying to place this in time. The fraternity was the most college-like thing in the film. Kind of looking at that 1984 lens, but even that was a little dated. The college fraternity of that type, I mean, Animal House had done it, and Animal House was a period piece. It actually takes place much before the movie came out because fraternities had already started to wane. I'm only going to go with a 2, but I am going to give credit to the bad guy Stan, who predicts the future in this film.
What?
Stan says, he says they have to be stopped because these nerds are a threat to our way of life. If they don't stop them, he, quote, we'll be up to our necks in nerd shit.
He's right. Bill
and
Gates.
This is the world we live in now. We are up to our necks.
He's totally right. Wow.
So I'm only going to go with a 2, but I wanted to make sure I gave credit to Stan for having predicted the modern world. All right, that brings us to the end of our scoring round. The top marks were given by Nick and Jack, then Stan and me picking up the rear. And as always, we have our secret modifiers this season. We do have new secret modifiers from last season. And Revenge of the Nerds gets a -1 for what we're calling this year problematic content. This movie has, by my count, the heroes doing 6 different crimes that would end you up on a sex offender list, at least 3 of them.
See, I only counted 3.
They do a B&E, they do illegal surveillance, voyeurism / peeping Tom is what it's called when you're...
consider all that one.
They show nudity to a minor.
Oh, thank God. I thought we were going to...
But I was a minor when I watched this, so...
Yeah, so, I mean, the video store should have been arrested for showing this to us, but that's not the point. They do share revenge nudes, which wouldn't be a crime at that point, but is now.
Was now, yeah.
And posing, as someone then. Posing as someone else when you have sex with someone is absolutely a crime. So it does get a -1 for that. Bringing revenge.
But you do have to say this, that the character of Lewis is probably about 4 or 5 inches shorter than the character of Stan, and she never went, something's different when she beat him off. So maybe she did know.
Yeah, there you go. That's...
No, no, they made love on the moon, so, you know, heights are...
Yeah. Yeah,
heights are relative.
They still walk into the moon. Because of the gravity change. No, she's laying down when he comes in.
Oh, she sees him at the door and she invites him in. She doesn't look at, like, I don't know, if I saw one of you guys and next time I saw you, you were in a mask and 4 inches shorter, even if I was 10 feet away, I'd go, I don't know about this.
You'd still make love to us, right?
Oh, fuck.
Oh, I can't believe I'm in love with a boogaloo. All right, that gives Revenge of the Nerds a total of 58 out of 100.
One modifier? I would have thought I would have had more.
Only gets the one modifier. There was another modifier that was on the bubble, but I decided that it did not qualify.
Oh, really? The one for how long before?
No. Oh, God, no. It takes forever to get nudity in this movie.
I know. I thought that was a modifier. Was another minus for taking too long to get to.
It was not. It's not.
Did we not decide to keep that one?
You get a bonus for early nudity, but not.
Oh, but not a negative. You should. Okay.
You should, because I was definitely going. Did I accidentally get the PG cut of this? Like, what?
Let me tell you something. I was never worried I was going to get nudity here. Unlike jocks.
All right, let's wrap this up so our listeners can get on with watching Revenge of the Nerds 2 through 4.
No, don't watch any of them. Even Robert Carradine says that. He's like, you make a pretty good movie, then you make a sequel that tarnishes its image. Then you make a couple of made-for-TV movies that further tarnishes image. but I do want to give Stan the chance to quickly tell us about the made-for-TV pilot.
It's got to be really quick. But
wrap it up. Let's close the. We got to close the mailbag here.
But yeah, because basically it is the same story as the movie. They show up, they get their room, they get tossed out. In this case, by not Stan, but Ogre's in there. But it's not Stan. It's another jock character. And you know, hilarity ensues. They wind up.
Hilarity, quotation mark.
Yeah. This one needs the laugh track. But they wind up going to Lambda, Lambda, Lambda. They talk. They convince them that they belong. But in this case, they need somebody from Lambda, Lambda, Lambda to be their, you know, on-site supervisor. So they get a black on-site supervisor. So hilarity ensues. And then they have to get back.
Is it Richard Roundtree?
No, it is not. So they wind up have to get back at the jocks for doing something to that for you know, being mean to them. So they manage to do this. Hilarity ensues. And
is there boobies?
Yes, that's right. It's absolutely chock full of boobies because it's like an ABC TV show. No, it's chock full of really awful jokes, and a booger that has really long stringy blonde hair and a tie-dye T-shirt who acts a little bit more like a hippie than booger.
Hey, isn't there a modifier for having actors that went on to be something? Because this one has a shit ton.
No.
Nope, that was the last season.
That was last season.
Oh, I don't know my modifiers. Boy, if this thing was a kung fu movie, it would have scored high.
But yes, so needless to say, if you ever get the chance to watch the Revenge of the Nerds TV show, I would suggest skipping it altogether, because you've seen Revenge of the Nerds, the movie. It is significantly better.
It is on YouTube if you want to skip it there.
Yes. All right. Well, we absolutely need to wrap this thing up because we have gone on and on and on about the nerds. All right.
Nerds!
Jim, nerds! Jim, tell us quickly about our Instagram.
Absolutely. We are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo, and please share your B-movie favorites using the hashtag Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
All right. Well, for Jim and Jack and Nick.
We said Jocks is the next movie. People can find that on YouTube. I think they might be able to find this one on YouTube too. I'm not sure, maybe not, but they can definitely find Jocks, our next one, on YouTube to join us in that hilarity.
Yes, I was getting there. Anyways, for Jim, for Jack, for Nick, and of course Brad, who's probably not even going to be around to watch Jocks with us next week. But hey, I'm just guessing, you know, based on you know, time so far. But I am 8th Dan, Stan Adu. Thank you for joining us on the Nerds, Jocks, and Preppies season of Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
Boobies.